by the ship's bow, facing the other way. For a second, her hand twitched to her sword. Then she saw Mogget nearby, precariously draped on the ship's rail. She approached nervously, her curiosity tempered by the need to be wary of strangers. He looked different, dressed, older, and somewhat intimidating, particularly since he seemed to have scorned her plain clothing, for a kilt of gold-striped red, with matching leggings of red-striped gold disappearing into turned-down thigh boots of russet doeskin. He was wearing her shirt, though, and preparing to put on a red leather jerkin. It had detachable lace-up sleeves, which seemed to be giving him some problems. Two swords lay in three-quarter scabbards near his feet, stabbing points shining 4 inches out of the leather. A wide belt with the appropriate hooks already encircled his waist. "Curse these laces," he said when she was about 10 paces away. A nice voice, quite deep, but currently frustrated and peaking with temper. "Good morning," said Sabriel. He whirled around, dropping the sleeves, almost ducking to his swords, before recovering to transform the motion into a bow, culminating in a descent to one knee.
"Good morning, milady,"
he said huskily, head bowed, carefully not meeting her gaze. She saw that he'd found some earrings, large gold hoops, clumsily pushed through pierced lobes, for they were bloodied. Apart from them, all she could see was the top of his curly-haired head. "I'm not milady," said Sabriel, wondering which of Miss Prionti's etiquette principles applied to this situation. "My name is Sabriel."
"Sabriel? But you are the Abhorsen," the man said slowly.
He didn't sound overly bright, Sabriel thought, with sinking expectations. Perhaps there would be very little conversation at breakfast after all.
"No, my father is the Abhorsen," she said, with a stern look at Mogget, warning him not to interfere. "I'm a sort of stand-in. It's a bit complicated, so I'll explain later. What's your name?"
He hesitated, then mumbled, "I can't remember, milady. Please call me
Touchstone."
"Touchstone?" asked Sabriel. That sounded familiar, but she couldn't place it for a moment.
"Touchstone? But that's a jester's name, a fool's name. Why call you that?"
"That's what I am," he said dully, without inflection.
"Well, I have to call you something," Sabriel continued. "Touchstone. You know, there is the tradition of a wise fool, so perhaps it's not so bad. I guess you think you're a fool because you've been imprisoned as a figurehead, and in death, of course."
"In death!" exclaimed Touchstone. He looked up, and his grey eyes met Sabriel's. Surprisingly, he had a clear, intelligent gaze. Perhaps there is some hope for him after all, she thought, as she explained,
"Your spirit was somehow preserved just beyond the border of death, and your body preserved as the wooden figurehead. Both necromantic and free magic would have been involved. Very powerful magic on both counts. I am curious as to why it was used on you."
Touchstone looked away again, and Sabriel sensed a certain shiftiness or embarrassment. She guessed that the forthcoming explanation would be a half-truth at best.
"I don't remember very well," he said slowly, "though things are coming back. I was a guardsman, the Royal Guard. There was some sort of attack upon the Queen, an ambush at the bottom of the stairs. I remember fighting with blade and charter magic. We were all charter mages, all the guard. I thought we were safe, but there was treachery. Then I was here. I don't know how."
Sabriel listened carefully, wondering how much of what he said was true. It was likely that his memory was impaired, but he possibly was a royal guard. Perhaps he had cast a diamond of protection. That could have been why his enemies could only imprison him rather than kill. But surely they could have waited till it failed. Why the bizarre method of imprisonment? And most importantly, how did the figurehead managed to get placed in this most protected of places? She filed all these questions for later investigation, for another thought had struck her. If he really was a royal guard, the queen he had guarded must have been dead and gone for at least 200 years, and, with her, everyone and everything he knew. "You have been a prisoner for a long time," she said gently, uncertain about how to break the news. "Have you, I mean, did you, well, what I mean is, it's been a very long time."
200 years, whispered Touchdown. "Your minion told me."
"Your family?"
"I have none," he said.
His expression was set, as immobile as the carved wood of the previous day. Carefully, he reached over and drew one of his swords, offering it to Sabriel, hilt first.
"I would serve you, milady, to fight against the enemies of the kingdom."
Sabriel didn't take the sword, though his plea made her reflexively reach out. But a moment's thought closed her open palm, and her arm fell back to her side. She looked at Mogget, who was watching the proceedings with unabashed interest.
"What have you told him, Mogget?"
she asked, suspicion wreathing her words.
"The state of the kingdom, generally speaking," replied the cat.
"Recent events.
Our descent here, more or less. Your duty as Abhorsen, to remedy the situation.
The Mordicant,
Shadow Hands, Gore Crows, the dead adept, whoever it may be."
"Not specifically," said Mogget cheerfully. "I thought he could presume as much."
"As you see," Sabriel said rather angrily, "my minion has not been totally honest with you. I was raised across the wall in Anselstier, so I have very little idea about what is going on. I have huge gaps in my knowledge of the Old Kingdom, including everything from geography to history to charter magic. I face some dire enemies, probably under the overall direction of one of the greater dead, a necromantic adept. And I'm not out to save the kingdom, just to find my father, the real Abhorsen. So I don't want to take your oath or service or anything like that, particularly as we've only just met. I'm happy for you to accompany us to the nearest approximation of civilization, but I have no idea what I'll be doing after that. And please remember that my name is Sabriel, not Milady, not Abhorsen. Now, I think it's time for breakfast." With that, she stalked over to her pack and started getting out some oatmeal and a small cooking pot. Touchstone stared after her for a moment, then picked himself up, attached his swords, put on the sleeveless jerkin, tied the sleeves to his belt, and wandered off to the nearest clump of trees. Mogget followed him there and watched him pick up dead branches and sticks for a fire.
"She really did grow up in Anselstier," said the cat. "She doesn't realize refusing your oath is an insult. And it's true enough about her ignorance. That's one of the reasons she needs your help."
"I can't remember much," said Touchstone, snapping a branch in half with considerable ferocity, "except my most recent past. Everything else is like a dream. I'm not sure if it's real or not, learned or imagined, and I wasn't insulted. My oath isn't worth much."
"But you'll help her," said Mogget.
It wasn't a question.
"No," said Touchstone. "Help is for equals. I'll serve her. That's all I'm good for."
As Sabriel feared, there was little conversation over breakfast. Mogget went off in search of his own, and Sabriel and Touchstone were hindered by the sole cooking pot and single spoon, so they took it in turns to eat half the porridge. Even allowing for this difficulty, Touchstone was uncommunicative. Sabriel started asking a lot of questions, but as his standard response was, "I'm sorry, I can't remember," she soon gave up.
"I don't suppose you can remember how to get out of this sinkhole either,"
she asked in exasperation, after a particularly long stretch of silence. Even to her, this sounded like a prefect addressing a miscreant 12-year-old.
"No, I'm sorry,"
Touchstone began automatically. Then he paused, and the corner of his mouth quirked up with a momentary spasm of pleasure.
Wait! Yes, I do remember. There's a hidden stair to the north of King Janel's ship.
Oh, I can't remember which one that is.
There's only four ships near the northern rim, Sabriel mused. It won't be too hard to find. How's your memory for other geography? The kingdom, for instance?
I'm not sure, replied Touchstone guardedly, bowing his head again.
Sabriel looked at him and took a deep breath to calm the eel-like writhings of anger that were slowly getting bigger and bigger inside her. She could excuse his faulty memory. After all, that was due to magical incarceration. But the servile manner that went with it seemed to be an affectation. He was like a bad actor playing the butler, or rather, a non-actor trying to impersonate a butler as best he could. But why?
Mogget drew me a map, she said, talking as much to calm herself as for any real communication. But as he apparently has only left Abhorson's house for a few weekends over the last 1,000 years, even 200-year-old memories.
Sabriel paused and bit her lip, suddenly aware that her annoyance with him had made her spiteful. He looked up as she stopped speaking, but no reaction showed on his face. He might as well still be carved from wood.
What I mean is, Sabriel continued carefully, it would be very helpful if you could advise me on the best route to Belisaire and the important landmarks and locations on the way.
She got the map out of the special pocket in the pack and removed the protective oilskin. Touchstone took one end as she unrolled it and weighted his two corners with stones while Sabriel secured hers with the telescope case.
I think we're about here, she said,
tracing her finger from Abhorson's house, following the Paperwing's flight from there to a point a little north of the Rattalin River Delta.
No,
said Touchstone, sounding decisive for the first time, his finger stabbing the map an inch to the north of Sabriel's own.
This is Hole Hollow here. It's only 10 leagues from the coast, and at the same latitude as Mount Anarson.
Good,
exclaimed Sabriel, smiling, her anger slipping from her.
You do remember. Now, what's the best route to Belisaire, and how long will it take?
I don't know the current conditions,
Sabriel,
Touchstone replied. His voice grew softer, more subdued.
From what Mogget says, the kingdom is in a state of anarchy. Towns and villages may no longer exist. There will be bandits, the dead, free magic unbound, fell creatures.
Ignoring all that, Sabriel asked, which way did you normally go?
From Nesto, the fishing village here, Touchstone said, pointing at the coast to the east of Hole Hollow. We'd ride north along the shoreway, changing horses at posthouses, 4 days to Calib, a rest day there, then the interior road up through Wansit Pass, 6 days all told to Oundon, a rest day in Oundon, then 4 days to Warchire. From there, it will be a day's ferry passage, or 2 days riding, to the west gate of Belisaire.
Even without the rest days, that'd be 18 days riding, at least 6 weeks walking. That's too long. Is there any other way?
A ship or boat from Nesto, interrupted Mogget,
stalking up behind Sabriel to place his paw firmly on the map.
If we can find one, and if either of you can sail it.
Chapter 15. The stair was to the north of the middle ship of the four. Concealed by both magic and artifice, it seemed to be little more than a particularly wet patch of the damp limestone that formed the sinkhole wall. But you could walk right through it, for it was really an open door with steps winding up behind. They decided to take these steps the next morning, after another day of rest. Sabriel was eager to move on, for she felt that her father's peril could only be increasing, but she was realistic enough to assess her own need for recovery time. Touchstone, too, probably needed a rest, she thought. She tried to coax more information out of him while they'd searched for the steps, but he was clearly reluctant to even open his mouth, and when he did, Sabriel found his humble apologies ever more irritating. After the door was found, she gave up altogether, and sat in the grass near the spring, reading her father's books on charter magic. The Book of the Dead stayed wrapped in oilskin. Even then, she felt its presence brooding in her pack. Touchstone stayed at the opposite end of the ship, near the bow, performing a series of fencing exercises with his twin swords and some stretches and minor acrobatics. Mogget watched him from the undergrowth, green eyes glittering as if intent on a mouse. Lunch was a culinary and conversational failure. Dried beef strips, garnished with watercress from the fringes of the spring, and monosyllabic responses from Touchstone. He even went back to Milady, despite Sabriel's repeated requests to use her name. Mogget didn't help by calling her Ab Horson. After lunch, everyone went back to their respective activities. Sabriel to her book, Touchstone to his exercises, and Mogget to his watching. Dinner was not something anyone had looked forward to. Sabriel tried talking to Mogget, but he seemed to be infected with Touchstone's reticence, though not with his servility. As soon as they'd eaten, everyone left the raked-together coals of the campfire, Touchstone to the west, Mogget north, and Sabriel east, and went to sleep on as comfortable a stretch of ground as could be discovered. Sabriel woke once in the night. Without getting up, she saw that the fire had been rekindled, and Touchstone sat beside it, staring into the flames, his eyes reflecting the capering, gold-red light. His face looked drawn, almost ill. "Are you all right?" Sabriel asked quietly, propping herself up on one elbow. Touchstone started, rocked back on his heels, and almost fell over. For once, he didn't sound like a sulky servant. "Not really. I remember what I would not, and forget what I should not. Forgive me." Sabriel didn't answer. He had spoken the last two words to the fire, not to her. "Please, go back to sleep, milady," Touchstone continued, slipping back to his servile role. "I will wake you in the morning." Sabriel opened her mouth to say something scathing about the arrogance of pretended humility, then shut it, and subsided back under her blanket. "Just concentrate on rescuing father," she told herself. "That is the one important thing. Rescue Ab Horson. Don't worry about Touchstone's problems or Mogget's curious nature. Rescue Ab Horson. Rescue Ab Horson. Rescue Ab Horse. Rescue." "Wake up," Mogget said, right in her ear. She rolled over, ignoring him, but he leapt across her head and repeated it in her other ear. "Wake up." "I'm awake," grumbled Sabriel. She sat up, with the blanket wrapped around her, feeling the pre-dawn chill on her face and hands. It was still extremely dark, save for the uneven light of the fire and the faintest brushings of dawn light above the sinkhole. Touchstone was already making the porridge. He'd also washed and shaved, using a dagger from the look of the nicks and cuts on his chin and neck. "Good morning," he said. "This will be ready in 5 minutes, milady." Sabriel groaned at that word again. Feeling like a shambling, blanket-shrouded excuse for a human being, she picked up her shirt and trousers and staggered off to find a suitable bush en route to the spring. The icy water of the spring completed the waking-up process without kindness, Sabriel exposing herself to it and the marginally warmer air for no more than the 10 seconds it took to shed undershirt, wash, and get dressed again. Clean, awake and clothed, she returned to the campfire and ate her share of the porridge. The waking-up process without kindness, Sabriel exposing herself to it and the marginally warmer air for no more than the 10 seconds it took to shed undershirt, wash, and get dressed again. Clean, awake and clothed, she returned to the campfire and ate her share of the porridge. Then Touchstone ate, while Sabriel buckled on armor, sword, and bells. Mogget lay near the fire, warming his white furred belly. Not for the first time, Sabriel wondered if he needed to eat at all. He obviously liked food, but he seemed to eat for amusement rather than sustenance. Touchstone continued being a servant after breakfast, cleaning pot and spoon, quenching the fire, and putting everything away. But when he was about to swing the pack on his back, Sabriel stopped him. "No, Touchstone, it's my pack. I'll carry it, thank you." He hesitated, then passed it to her, and would have helped her put it on, but she had her arms through the straps, and the pack swung on before he could take the weight. Half an hour later, perhaps a third of the way up the narrow stone-carved stair, Sabriel regretted her decision to take the pack. She still wasn't totally recovered from the paper-wing crash, and the stair was very steep, and so narrow that she had difficulty negotiating the spiralling turns. The pack always seemed to jam against the outside or inside wall, no matter which way she turned. "Perhaps we should take it in turns to carry the pack," she said reluctantly, when they stopped at a sort of alcove to catch their breath. Touchstone, who had been leading, nodded, and came back down a few steps to take the pack. "I'll lead, then," Sabriel added, flexing her back and shoulders, shuddering slightly at the pack-induced layer of sweat on her back, greasy under armour, tunic, shirt, and undershirt. She picked up her candle from the bench and stepped up. "No," said Touchstone, stepping in her way. "There are guards and guardians on this stair. I know the words and signs to pass them. You are the Abhorsen, so they might let you pass, but I am not sure." "Your memory must be coming back," Sabriel commented, slightly peeved at being thwarted. "Tell me, is this stair the one you mentioned when you said the Queen was ambushed?"
"No," Touchstone replied flatly.
He hesitated, then added, "That stair was in Belisair." With that, he turned and continued up the stairs. Sabriel followed, Mogget at her heels. Now that she wasn't lumbered by her pack, she felt more alert. Watching Touchstone, she saw him pause occasionally and mutter some words under his breath. Each time, there was the faint, feather-like touch of charter magic. Subtle magic, much cleverer than in the tunnel below. Harder to detect, and probably much more deadly, Sabriel thought. Now she knew it was there, she also picked up the faint sensation of death. This stair had seen killings a long, long time ago. Finally, they came to a large chamber, with a set of double doors to one side. Light leaked in from a large number of small circular holes in the roof, or, as Sabriel soon saw, through an overgrown lattice that had once been open to air and sky.
"That's the outside door," Touchstone said, unnecessarily.
He snuffed out his candle, took Sabriel's, now little more than a stub of wax, and put both in a pocket stitched to the front of his kilt. Sabriel thought of joking about the hot wax and the potential for damage, but thought better of it. Touchstone was not the light-hearted type. "How does it open?" asked Sabriel, indicating the door. She couldn't see any handle, lock, or key, or any hinges for that matter. Touchstone was silent, eyes unfocused and staring. Then he laughed, a bitter little chuckle.
"I don't remember. All the way up the stair, all the words and signals, and now useless, useless."
"At least you got us up the steps," Sabriel pointed out, alarmed by the violence of his self-loathing.
"I'd still be sitting by the spring, watching it bubble if you hadn't come along."
"You would have found the way out," Touchstone muttered. "Or Mogget would."
"Would. Yes, that's what I deserve to be."
"Touchstone," Mogget interrupted, hissing. "Shut up. You're to be useful, remember?"
"Yes," replied Touchstone, visibly calming his breathing, composing his face. "I'm sorry, Mogget, milady."
"Please, please, just Sabriel," she said tiredly. "I've only just left school. I'm only 18. Calling me milady seems ridiculous."
"Sabriel," Touchstone said tentatively. "I will try to remember. Milady is a habit.
It reminds me of my place in the world. It's easier for me.
I don't care what's easier for you, Sabriel snapped. Don't call me m'lady, and stop acting like a half-wit. Just be yourself. Behave normally. I don't need a valet. I need a useful friend.
Very well, Sabriel, Touchstone said, with careful emphasis. He was angry now, but at least that was an improvement over servile, Sabriel thought.
Now, she said to the smirking Mogget, have you got any ideas about this door?
Just one, replied Mogget,
sliding between her legs and over to the thin line that marked the division between the two leaves of the door.
Push! One on each side.
Push?
Why not? Said Touchstone, shrugging. He took up a position, braced against the left side of the door, palms flat on the metal-studded wood. Sabriel hesitated, then did the same against the right.
One, two, three, push! Announced Mogget.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Sabriel by Garth Nix. Read for you by Tim Curry.
Sabriel pushed on three and Touchstone on push, so their combined effort took several seconds to synchronize. Then the doors creaked slowly open, sunshine spilling through in a bright bar, climbing from floor to ceiling, dust motes dancing in its progress.
It feels strange, said Touchstone, the wood humming beneath his hands like plucked lute strings.
I can hear voices, exclaimed Sabriel at the same time, her ears full of half-caught words, laughter, distant singing.
I can see time, whispered Mogget so softly that his words were lost.
Then the doors were open. They walked through, shielding their eyes against the sun, feeling the cool breeze sharp on their skin, the fresh scent of pine trees clearing their nostrils of underground dust. Mogget sneezed quickly, three times, and ran about in a tight circle. The doors slid shut behind them, as silently and inexplicably as they'd opened. They stood in a small clearing, in the middle of a pine forest or plantation, for the trees were regularly spaced. The doors behind them stood in the side of a low hillock of turf and stunted bushes. Pine needles lay thick on the ground, pine cones peeking through every few paces, like skulls ploughed up on some ancient battleground.
The watchword, said Touchstone.
He took several deep breaths, looked at the sky and sighed.
It is winter, I think. Or early spring?
Winter, replied Sabriel.
It was snowing quite heavily back near the wall. It seems much milder here.
Most of the wall, the long cliffs, and Abhorsen's house are on, or part of, the southern plateau,
Mogget explained.
The plateau is between 1,000 and 2,000 feet above the coastal plain. In fact, the area around Nesto, where we are headed, is mostly below sea level and has been reclaimed.
Yes, said Touchstone. I remember. Long dike, the raised canals, the wind pumps to raise the water.
You're both very informative for a change, remarked Sabriel.
Would one of you care to tell me something I really want to know? Like, what are the great charters?
I can't, Mogget and Touchstone said together.
Then Touchstone continued, haltingly.
There is a spell, a binding on us. But someone who is not a charter mage, or otherwise closely bound to the charter, might be able to speak.
A child, perhaps, baptized with the charter mark, but not grown into power.
You're cleverer than I thought, commented Mogget.
Not that that's saying much.
A child, said Sabriel. Why would a child know?
If you'd had a proper education, you'd know, too, said Mogget. A waste of good silver, that school of yours.
Perhaps, agreed Sabriel. But now that I know more of the Old Kingdom, I suspect being at school in Anselstia saved my life. But enough of that. Which way do we go now?
Touchstone looked at the sky, blue above the clearing, dark where the pines circled. The sun was just visible above the trees, perhaps an hour short of its noontime zenith.
Touchstone looked from it to the shadows of the trees, then pointed.
East. There should be a series of charter stones leading from here to the eastern edge of the Watchwood. This place is heavily warded with magic. There were many stones.
The stones were still there, and after the first, some sort of animal track that meandered from one stone to the next. It was cool under the pines, but pleasant. The constant presence of the charter stones, a reassuring sensation to Sabriel and Touchstone, who could sense them like lighthouses in a sea of trees. There were 7 stones in all, and none of them broken, though Sabriel felt a stab of nervous tension every time they left the ambience of one and moved to another. A stark picture always flashing into her head, the blood-stained, riven stone of Cloven Crest. The last stone stood on the very edge of the pine forest, atop a granite bluff 30 or 40 yards high, marking the forest's eastern edge and the end of high ground. They stood next to the stone and looked out towards the huge expanse of blue-grey sea, white-crested, restless, always rolling in to shore. Below them were the flat, sunken fields of Nesto, maintained by a network of raised canals, pumps, and dikes. The village itself lay 3/4 of a mile away, high on another granite bluff, the harbour out of sight on the other side.
"The fields are flooded," said Touchstone, in a puzzled tone, as if he couldn't believe what he was seeing. Sabriel followed his gaze, and saw that what she had taken for some crop was actually silt and water, sitting tepidly where food once grew. Windmills, power for the pumps, stood silent, trefoil-shaped vanes still atop scaffolding towers, even though a salt-laden breeze blew in from the sea.
"But the pumps were charter-spelled," Touchstone exclaimed, "to follow the wind, to work without care."
"There are no people in the fields. No one on this side of the village," Mogget added, his eyes keener than the telescope in Sabriel's pack.
"Nesto's charter-stone must be broken," Sabriel said, mouth tight, words cold, "and I can smell a certain stench on the breeze. There are dead in the village. A boat would be the quickest way to Belisaire, and I'm reasonably confident of my sailing," Touchstone remarked. "But if the dead are there, shouldn't we—"
"We'll go down and get a boat," Sabriel announced firmly, "while the sun is high."
Chapter 16. There was a built-up path through the flooded fields, but it was submerged to ankle depth, with occasional thigh-high slippages. Only the raised canal drains stood well above the brackish water, and they all ran towards the east, not towards the village, so Sabriel and Touchstone were forced to wade along the path. Mogget, of course, rode, his lean form draped around Sabriel's neck like a white fox fur. Water and mud, coupled with an uncertain path, made it slow going. It took an hour to cover less than a mile, so it was later in the afternoon than Sabriel would have wished when they finally climbed out of the water, up onto the beginnings of the village's rocky mount. "At least the sky is clear," Sabriel thought, glancing up. The winter sun wasn't particularly hot and couldn't be described as glaring, but it would certainly deter most kindred of the lesser dead from venturing out. Nevertheless, they walked carefully up to the village, swords loose, Sabriel with a hand to her bells. The path wound up in a series of steps carved from the rock, reinforced here and there with bricks and mortar. The village proper nestled on top of the bluff, about 30 cosy brick cottages, with wood-tile roofs, some painted bright colours, some dull, and some simply grey and weather-beaten. It was completely silent, save for the odd gust of wind or the mournful cry of a gull slipping down through the air above. Sabriel and Touchstone drew closer together, walking almost shoulder to shoulder up what passed for a main street, swords out now, eyes flickering across closed doors and shuttered windows. Both felt uneasy, nervous, a nasty, tingling, creeping sensation climbing up from spine to nape of neck to forehead charter mark. Sabriel also felt the presence of dead things, lesser dead, hiding from sunlight, lurking somewhere nearby, in house or cellar. At the end of the main street, on the highest point of the bluff, a charter stone stood on a patch of carefully tended lawn. Half of the stone had been sheared away, pieces broken and tumbled, dark stone on green turf. A body lay in front of the stone, hands and feet bound, the gaping cut across the throat a clear sign of where the blood had come from. The blood for the sacrifice that broke the stone. Sabriel knelt by the corpse, eyes averted from the broken stone. It was only recently ruined, she felt, but already the door to death was creaking open. She could almost feel the cold of the currents beyond, leaking out around the stone, sucking warmth and life from the air. Things lurked there, too, she knew, just beyond the border. She sensed their hunger for life, their impatience for night to fall. As she expected, the corpse was of a charter mage, dead but 3 or 4 days, but she hadn't expected to find the dead person was a woman. Wide shoulders and a muscular build had deceived her for a moment, but there was a middle-aged woman before her, eyes shut, throat cut, short brown hair caked with sea salt and blood.
"The village healer," said Mogget,
indicating a bracelet on her wrist with his nose. Sabriel pushed the rope bindings aside for a better look. The bracelet was bronze, with inlaid charter marks of greenstone. Dead marks now, for blood dried upon the bronze, and no pulse beat in the skin under the metal. "She was killed 3 or 4 days ago," Sabriel announced. "The stone was broken at the same time." Touchstone looked back at her and nodded grimly, then resumed watching the houses opposite. His swords hung loosely in his hands, but Sabriel noticed that his entire body was tense, like a compressed jack-in-the-box, ready to spring. "Whoever, whatever, killed her and broke the stone, didn't enslave her spirit," Sabriel added quietly, as if thinking to herself. "I wonder why." Neither Mogget nor Touchstone answered. For a moment, Sabriel considered asking the woman herself, but her impetuous desire for journeys into death had been soundly dampened by recent experience. Instead, she cut the woman's bonds and arranged her as best she could, ending up with a sort of curled-up sleeping position. "I don't know your name, healer," Sabriel whispered, "but I hope you go quickly beyond the final gate. Farewell." She stood back and drew the charter marks for the funeral pyre above the corpse, whispering the names of the marks as she did so, but her fingers fumbled, and words went awry. The baleful influence of the broken stone pressed against her, like a wrestler gripping her wrists, clamping her jaw. Sweat beaded on her forehead, and pain shot through her limbs, her hands shaking with effort, tongue clumsy, seeming swollen in her suddenly dry mouth. Then she felt assistance come, strength flowing through her, reinforcing the marks, steadying her hands, clearing her voice. She completed the litany, and a spark exploded above the woman, became a twisting flame, then grew to a fierce, white-hot blaze that spread the length of the woman's body, totally consuming it, to leave only ash, light cargo for the sea winds. The extra strength came through Touchstone's hand. his open palm lightly resting on her shoulder. As she straightened up, the touch was lost. When Sabriel turned around, Touchstone was just drawing right-hand sword, eyes fixed on the houses, as if he'd had nothing to do with helping her.
"Thank you," said Sabriel.
Touchstone was a strong charter mage, perhaps as strong as she was. This surprised her, though she couldn't think why. He'd made no secret of being a charter mage. She'd just assumed he would only know a few of the more fighting-related marks and spells, petty magics.
"We should move on," said Mogget, prowling backwards and forwards in agitation, carefully avoiding the fragments from the broken stone. "Find a boat and put to sea before nightfall."
"The harbour is that way," Touchstone added quickly, pointing with his sword.
Both he and the cat seemed very keen to leave the area around the broken stone, thought Sabriel. But then, so was she. Even in bright daylight, it seemed to dull the colour around it. The lawn was already more yellow than green, and even the shadows looked thicker and more abundant than they should. She shivered, remembering Cloven Crest and the thing called Thralk. The harbour lay on the northern side of the bluff, reached by another series of steps in the rocky hill, or in the case of cargo, via one of the sheer-legged hoists that lined the edge of the bluff. Long wooden jetties thrust out into the clear blue-green water, sheltered under the lee of a rocky island, a smaller sibling of the village bluff. A long breakwater of huge boulders joined island and shore, completing the harbour's protection from wind and wave. There were no boats moored in the harbour, tied up to the jetties, or at the harbour wall, not even a dinghy, hauled up for repair. Sabriel stood on the steps, looking down, mind temporarily devoid of further plans. She just watched the swirl of the sea around the barnacled piles of the jetties, the moving shadows in the blue, marking small fish schooling about their business. Mogget sat near her feet, sniffing the air, silent. Touchstone stood higher, behind her, guarding the rear.
"What now?"
asked Sabriel, generally indicating the empty harbour below, her arm moving with the same rhythm as the swell, in its perpetual tilt against wood and stone.
"There are people on the island," Mogget said, eyes slitted against the wind, "and boats tied up between the two outcrops of rock on the southwest."
Sabriel looked, but saw nothing, till she extracted the telescope from the pack on Touchstone's back. He stood completely still while she ferreted around, silent as the empty village. Playing wooden again, Sabriel thought, but she didn't really mind. He was being helpful, without metaphorically tugging his forelock every few minutes. Through the telescope, she saw that Mogget was right. There were several boats partly hidden between two spurs of rock, and some slight signs of habitation, a glimpse of a washing line, blown around the corner of a tall rock, the momentary sight of movement between two of the six or seven ramshackle wooden buildings that nestled on the island's southwestern side. Shifting her gaze to the breakwater, Sabriel followed its length. As she'd half expected, there was a gap in the very middle of it, where the sea rushed through with considerable force. A pile of timber on the island side of the breakwater indicated that there had once been a bridge there, now removed. "It looks like the villagers fled to the island," she said, shutting the telescope down. "There's a gap in the breakwater, to keep running water between the island and shore. An ideal defense against the dead. I don't think even a mordicant would risk crossing deep tidal water."
"Let's go then," muttered Touchstone.
He sounded nervous again, jumpy. Sabriel looked at him, then above his head, and saw why he was nervous. Clouds were rolling in from the southeast, behind the village. Dark clouds, laden with rain. The air was calm, but now she saw the clouds, Sabriel recognized it was the calm before heavy rain. The sun would not be guarding them for very much longer, and night would be an early guest. Without further urging, she set off down the steps, down to the harbour side, and then along to the breakwater. Touchstone followed more slowly, turning every few steps to watch the rear. Mogget did likewise, his small cat face continually looking back, peering up at the houses. Behind them, shutters inched open, and fleshless eyes watched from the safety of shadows, watched the trio marching out to the breakwater, still washed in harsh sunlight, flanked by swift-moving waves of terrible water. Rotten, corroded teeth ground and gnashed in skeletal mouths. Farther back from the windows, shadows darker than ones ever cast by light, whirled in frustration, anger, and fear. They all knew who had passed. One such shadow, selected by lot and compelled by its peers, gave up its existence in life with a silent scream, vanishing into death. Their master was many, many leagues away, and the quickest way to reach him lay in death. Of course, message delivered, the messenger would fall through the gates to a final demise. But the master didn't care about that. The gap in the breakwater proved to be at least 15 feet wide, and the water was twice Sabriel's height, the sea surging through with a rough aggression. It was also covered by archers from the island, as they discovered when an arrow struck the stones in front of them and skittered off into the sea. Instantly Touchstone rushed in front of Sabriel, and she felt the flow of charter magic from him, his swords sketching a great circle in the air in front of them both. Glowing lines followed the sword's path, till a shining circle hung in the air. Four arrows curved through the air from the island. One, striking the circle, simply vanished. The other three missed completely, striking stones or sea.
"Arrow ward," gasped Touchstone. "Effective, but hard to keep going. Do we retreat?"
"Not yet," replied Sabriel. She could feel the dead stirring in the village behind them, and she could also see the archers now. There were four of them, two pairs, each behind one of the large upthrust stones that marked where the breakwater joined the island. They looked young, nervous, and were already proven to be of little threat.
"Hold!" shouted Sabriel. "We are friends!"
There was no reply. But the archers didn't loose their nocked arrows.
"What's the village leader's title, usually, I mean? What are they called?"
Sabriel whispered hurriedly to Touchstone, once again wishing she knew more about the old kingdom and its customs.
"In my day,"
Touchstone replied slowly, his swords retracing the arrow ward, attention mostly on that,
"in my day, elder, for this size of village."
"We wish to speak with your elder,"
shouted Sabriel. She pointed at the cloud front advancing behind her and added,
"Before darkness falls."
"Wait,"
came the answer, and one of the archers scampered back from the rocks up towards the buildings. Closer to, Sabriel realized they were probably boathouses or something like that. The archer returned in a few minutes, an older man hobbling over the rocks behind him. The other three archers, seeing him, lowered their bows and returned shafts to quivers. Touchstone, seeing this, ceased to maintain the arrow ward. It hung in the air for a moment, then dissipated, leaving a momentary rainbow. The elder was named, in fact, as well as title, they saw, as he limped along the breakwater. Long white hair blew like fragile cobwebs around his thin, wrinkled face, and he moved with the deliberate intention of the very old. He seemed unafraid, perhaps possessed of the disinterested courage of one already close to death.
"Who are you?"
he asked when he reached the gap, standing above the swirling waters like some prophet of legend, his deep orange cloak flapping around him from the rising breeze.
"What do you want?"
Sabriel opened her mouth to answer, but Touchstone had already started to speak, loudly.
"I am Touchstone, sworn swordsman for the Abhorsen, who stands before you. Are arrows your welcome for such folk as we?"
The old man was silent for a moment, his deep-set eyes focused on Sabriel, as if he could strip away any falsity or illusion by sight alone. Sabriel met his gaze, but out of the corner of her mouth she whispered to Touchstone,
"What makes you think you can speak for me? Wouldn't a friendly approach be better? And since when are you my sworn?"
She stopped, as the old man cleared his throat to speak, and spat into the water. For a moment she thought that this was his response, but as neither the archers nor Touchstone reacted, it was obviously of no account.
"These are bad times," the elder said. "We have been forced to leave our firesides for the smoking sheds, warmth and comfort for sea winds and the stench of fish. Many of the people of Nestor are dead, or worse. Strangers and travelers are rare in such times, and not always what they seem."
"I am the Abhorsen," Sabriel said, reluctantly. "Enemy of the dead."
"I remember," replied the old man slowly. "Abhorsen came here when I was a young man. He came to put down the haunts that the spice merchant brought, Charter, curse him. Abhorsen. I remember that coat you're wearing, blue as a 10-fathom sea, and with the silver keys. There was a sword, also."
He paused expectantly. Sabriel stood silently, waiting for him to go on.
"He wants to see the sword," Touchstone said, voice flat, after the silence stretched too far.
"Oh,"
replied Sabriel, flushing. It was quite obvious. Carefully, so as not to alarm the archers, she drew her sword, holding it up to the sun so the charter marks could clearly be seen. Silver dancers on the blade.
"Yes," sighed the elder, old shoulders sagging with relief. "That is the sword, Charter spelled. She is the Abhorsen."
He turned and tottered back towards the archers, worn voice increasing to the ghost of a fisherman's cross-water hail.
"Come on, you four, quick with the bridge. We have visitors. Help at last."
Sabriel glanced at Touchstone, raising her eyebrows at the implication of the old man's last three words. Surprisingly, Touchstone met her gaze and held it. It is traditional for someone of high rank, such as yourself, to be announced by their sworn swordsman, he said quietly. "And the only acceptable way for me to travel with you is as your sworn swordsman. Otherwise, people will assume that we are, at best, illicit lovers. Having your name coupled to mine in such a guise would lower you in most eyes. You see?"
"Ah,"
replied Sabriel, gulping, feeling the flush of embarrassment come back and spread from her cheeks to her neck. It felt a lot like being on the receiving end of one of Miss Prionti's severest social put-downs. She hadn't even thought about how it would look, the two of them travelling together. Certainly, in Anselstier, it would be considered shameful. But this was the old kingdom, where things were different. But only some things, it seemed.
"Lesson 207,
muttered Mogget, from somewhere near her feet.
3 out of 10. I wonder if they've got any fresh caught whiting. I'd like a small one, still flopping.
"Be quiet," Sabriel interrupted. "You'd better pretend to be a normal cat for a while."
"Very well, milady." "Abhorsen,"
Mogget replied, stalking away to sit on the other side of Touchstone. Sabriel was about to reply scathingly when she saw the faintest curve at the corner of Touchstone's mouth.
Touchstone? Grinning?
Surprised, she misplaced the retort on her tongue, then forgot it altogether. As the four archers heaved a plank across the gap, the end smacking down onto stone with a startling bang.
"Please cross quickly,"
the elder said as the men steadied the plank.
"There are many fell creatures in the village now, and I fear the day is almost done."
True to his words, cloud shadow fell across them as he spoke, and the fresh scent of closing rain mingled with the wet and salty smell of the sea. Without further urging, Sabriel ran quickly across the plank, Mogget behind her, Touchstone bringing up the rear. Chapter 17. All the survivors of Nesto were gathered in the largest of the fish-smoking sheds, save for the current shift of archers who watched the breakwater. There had been 126 villagers the week before. Now there were 31.
"There were 32 until this morning," the elder said to Sabriel, as he passed her a cup of passable wine and a piece of dried fish atop a piece of very hard, very stale bread. "We thought we were safe when we got to the island, but Monja Stowart's boy was found just after dawn today, sucked dry like a husk. When we touched him, it was like burnt paper that still holds its shape. We touched him, and it crumbled into flakes of something like ash."
Sabriel looked around as the old man spoke, noting the many lanterns, candles, and rush tapers that added both to the light and the smoky, fishy atmosphere of the shed. The survivors were a very mixed group, men, women, and children, from very young to the elder himself. Their only common characteristic was the fear pinching their faces, the fear showing in their nervous, staccato movement.
"We think one of them's here," said a woman, her voice long gone beyond fear to fatalism.
She stood alone, accompanied by the clear space of tragedy. Sabriel guessed she had lost her family, husband, children, perhaps parents and siblings too, for she wasn't over 40.
"It'll take us, one by one," the woman continued, matter of fact,
her voice filling the shed with dire certainty. Around her, people shuffled twitchily, not looking at her, as if to meet her gaze would be to accept her words. Most looked at Sabriel, and she saw hope in their eyes, not blind faith or complete confidence, but a gambler's hope that a new horse might change a run of losses.
"The Abhorsen who came when I was young," the elder continued,
and Sabriel saw that at his age, this would be his memory alone of all the villagers.
"This Abhorsen told me that it was his purpose to slay the dead. He saved us from the haunts that came in the merchant's caravan."
"Is it still the same, lady?
Will Abhorsen save us from the dead?"
Sabriel thought for a moment, her mind mentally flicking through the pages of the Book of the Dead, feeling it stir in the backpack that sat by her feet. Her thoughts strayed to her father, the forthcoming journey to Belisaire, the way in which dead enemies seemed to be arrayed against her by some controlling mind.
"I will ensure this island is free of the dead," she said at last, speaking clearly so all could hear her. "But I cannot free the mainland village. There is a greater evil at work in the kingdom, that same evil that has broken your charter stone, and I must find and defeat it as soon as I can. When that is done, I will return, I hope, with other help, and both village and charter stone will be restored."
"We understand," replied the elder.
He seemed saddened, but philosophic. He continued, speaking more to his people than to Sabriel.
"We can survive here. There is the spring and the fish. We have boats. If Kalib has not fallen to the dead, we can trade for vegetables and other stuffs."
"You will have to keep watching the breakwater," Touchstone said.
He stood behind Sabriel's chair, the very image of a stern bodyguard.
"The dead, or their living slaves, may try to fill it in with stones or push across a bridge. They can cross running water by building bridges of boxed grave dirt." "So we are besieged," said a man to the front of the mass of villagers. "But what of this dead thing already here on the island, already preying upon us?
How will you find it?
Silence fell as the questioner spoke, for this was the one answer everyone wanted to hear. Rain sounded loud on the roof in the absence of human speech, steady rain, as had been falling since late afternoon.